Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hello, Sharks fans. Two guys doing a podcast. Okay, that's enough. I'm trying to pay tribute to Don LaFontaine, who was infamously known as that movie trailer voice guy. He passed away today. Great voice, Don. That's nothing like mine. So my hat is off to you for making a great living in a business that I wouldn't think you could make a great living at.
We're going to miss you.
We are going to miss you, because it's funny how every trailer starts with one man. Has nothing to do with hockey, but it's still pretty funny. Okay, so we actually do have some Sharks news this week.
Dude, I was so excited to get here. I got a speeding ticket.
I know. You got a speeding ticket on the way over here.
I know. I was so excited. But let me tell you, when I got pulled over and I rolled down my window and he asked for a license and registration, he said, "Oh, Dude's on Hockey, right?"
Yeah, you noticed.
And I said, "Yeah, I'm late for the podcast." He says, What do you think about that Vlasic extension?"
That's a good point. So that's the number one news of this week for the Sharks. Vlasic signs a four-year extension for exactly the same amount of money as Christian Ehrhoff, $3.1 million per year. It's a good signing.
I mean, steal.
It's the right amount of money. It's a good amount of money, and it's a good amount of term. What's the problem? I don't see how anybody could really have a problem with this deal unless you have some sort of personal vendetta against Marc-Edouard Vlasic, which I don't know how is that even possible.
I think what maybe the only criticism could be of this deal is that Vlasic last year didn't have a great year without Scott Hannon. I mean, he didn't play bad. I mean, he played good, but there was a time last year, there was a period where we were a little down on him, you and I.
We were.
And we were comparing him to our favorite Josh Georges. He could take a hit.
Our favorite whipping boy.
But I think that Vlasic really bounced back, and I think where he's really going to excel this year is they've surrounded him with better players.
Right, and I think that he might sort of get some rub-off offensive numbers, which might...
He just said rub off. I can't believe
you're
it.
Smiling at my terms, all right? But he might pick up some assists and pick up some pluses and things like that for playing with these two offensive type defensemen and Boyle and Blake. So I think, you know, he may not be as invisible as he was last year. I think people in hockey in the know about Marc-Edouard Vlasic, but I would say even among Sharks fans, he isn't any sort of a marquee player. But now this deal will sort of, put him into the spotlight.
Oh, my. One man.
Thrusting into the spotlight.
I think what people are afraid of is what happened to Matt Carl. And after he signed the extension, Carl really went, backwards. And is that what's going to happen to Vlasic? I don't think that's going to happen to Vlasic. He's going to be playing, I hope with Rob Blake. I think that would be a great pairing for him. And I think he could have his best offensive season this year, like you were alluding to. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great signing.
Yeah, I agree. And, I found something just sort of randomly today. There's a guy who runs a site called hockeyanalytics.com, not to be confused with our blog,
hockeyanalysis.com.
But anyway, so this guy is, I don't know if he's an amateur or professional statistician, but he put out like a season report, which numbers about 50 pages. I didn't get all the way through it. But one of the important pieces is that Marc-Edouard Vlasic is ranked as the top, according to this guy's metric, which, is suspect. And I invite people to go to this guy's website and check out the report. Marc-Edouard Vlasic comes out as the top defensive defenseman in the NHL for last year. So do I trust that? I don't know if I really trust it, but it's an interesting metric, and it's an interesting to note for Sharks fans is that's the filter or the prism through which we should be viewing Vlasic. We shouldn't be looking for him to score 35 points a year. That's not his game. And with Carl, obviously Carl went down because his metric is points, and we saw the points go down. But with Vlasic, We can't just look to see how many goals and assists he had and how much power play time. We really, you know, it's hard to measure defensive ability in the NHL. It still is hard. But I think Vlasic, at least according to this guy and according to others, he's damn good at it. So
good
there it
point.
Is. Another guy who was actually marked very high in the defensive category was Mike Greer, actually.
Really?
He was in the top five defensive forwards.
Really?
No joke. And that's for last season, a season that I think most people would characterize as disappointing, which sort of leads us into the next topic. There is a rumor that Greer is in extension talks. We can't find a source for it. So if you have a source for that, please send it to us, questions@dudesonhockey.com. But let's just take the hypothetical situation then. Greer in extension, should we sign him to an extension? What kind of money in term are we talking about?
I wouldn't do it until after the season. I mean, I think even though with this metric that you're talking about, I thought Greer had a down year last year. I think his, you know, leadership skills, I can't quite put a quantity on what they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it seemed like, you know, the team certainly has been searching for stronger leadership, and by bringing in two pretty strong personalities by all accounts in Boyle and Blake, you know, that Greer's leadership hasn't necessarily taken us to the next level. I would think if he has a bounce back year this year, he's effective on the kill and he shows he's an energy player. And if you're not playing with energy, mm-hmm. as an energy player, mm-hmm. then I would say at the end of the year that maybe it's time for him to move on. I wouldn't lock him up now.
Okay. Yeah. I can agree with that. The defensive capabilities, it's certainly, when you're a forward, to me, it's certainly not as important as offensive capabilities. And if you're only a defensive guy that doesn't put up a lot of points, even guys that win the Selke Trophy like Datsyuk and Fedorov and Madden, I mean, those guys still put up some points. And if you're talking about Mike Greer, who doesn't put up a lot of points, then you're really talking about a very, very specialized player. And the Sharks don't play that kind of system, especially with an offensive-minded coach in McClellan. And so if he continues on this current track, which is, you know, good penalty kill, not a lot of points, not a lot of offensive upside, then it doesn't sound like he's the kind of player that really fits with the way the Sharks are trying to be built.
I think we have to wait and see how he's going to figure into McClellan's system this year before any extensions are handed out.
Yeah. I hope they wait. Obviously, with Vlasic, they really jumped the gun. I mean, they signed him almost as soon as they could. And now that Greer is in the last year of his deal, they can also do the same with him. But given the cap situation, which is still the ongoing saga with the Sharks, still unknown, you know, McLaren still not signed. We have two defenseman trades in the NHL that we're going to talk about later in the show. You know, and we can talk about how that might, you know, shed some light on what the prospects are for us trading McLaren. So that might be something we can touch on later in the show. But you spoke a moment ago about Mike Greer and his leadership, and one thing that's sort of come up again with McClellan in a blog by David Pollock is the idea of Patrick Marleau not being the captain of the Sharks. And at least according to McClellan, he said, this is Marleau's team. And I know that there's some bloggers out there, I'm not going to name names, and there's some people out there that aren't so stoked on Marleau having the C. I'm going to withhold judgment on this for right now, but I'll give it to you. What about Marleau giving the C to somebody else or retaining the C as McClellan seems to have decided?
Well, if that's McClellan's decision, then I think it's fine. But I don't think Marleau should just get to keep the C because he wore the C last year. I mean, a lot of teams have rotating captains. We see it in the NFL all the time. They have four captains, you know, but right.
But it's not quite the same significance in the NFL.
That's very true. But this team hopefully is going to have a different look, a different attitude. And they certainly have had a little bit of a personality change with, you know, some major new faces on this team.
Veteran
faces on this team. And I think that the team deserves to have the opportunity to play through training camp and see who is going to step up and take their leadership role on this team. If it's Marleau, that's great. If it's not, and he's going to, you know, defer to Boyle or Blake or JR mm-hmm. in a situation where, you know, the captain needs to be speaking up and kicking some butt in the locker room or leading by example, like Marlowe really did at the end of the year in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
then mm-hmm. It should be him. But it should be McClellan's decision. And it sounds like, you know, he's perhaps made it, or maybe he's just saying what he needs to say right now, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I don't know about the rotating captain system. I don't know if the Sharks really... I guess it was sort of a little up in the air after Nolan left, and it was sort of decided upon Marlowe. I think Alan McCauley had it for a little while and things
right.
like that. But my sort of feeling on this matter is actually almost contrary to what you said, in that unless you have a very good reason to take the C away from somebody, he keeps it.
How about two straight failures in the playoffs?
So you're going to lay that at the feet of one guy when we have a lot of other guys that didn't do all that great in the playoffs?
I'm not saying that's what we should do. I'm sort of putting out there what I think some people's arguments are. You can't deny that they're as spoiled as we have been, mm-hmm. that there's definitely some disappointment. And as we've seen with all the talk about Joe Thornton being a, you know, so-called failure
in the playoffs,
in
right.
the playoffs, that this team, even though everyone seems to be picking them to win the Pacific Division again, like there's almost like a little bit of skepticism about them. Like, well, you know, they're just going to eat it again.
Right. Right. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, as far as I know, there's nothing stopping anybody else in the locker room from stepping up and being a vocal leader. By most accounts, Marlowe is not that vocal leader. Does that mean the team is bound for failure? I don't think so. There are some people out there that do. They want to see a guy out there yelling and screaming and, you know, taking matters into his own hands physically, like we saw Brendan Morrow do in the Dallas series. Like, people always point to Jerome Iginla as one of those. You know, I don't know, you know, but I always think of a guy like Steve Yzerman. Steve Yzerman had a lot of success in this league. He was a hell of a captain, a hell of a player, and he didn't really talk. I'm not going to say Marlowe is Steve Yzerman, but there's definitely a place for that kind of style of leadership in the NHL. And it, just because a guy doesn't, you know, beat somebody's ass or get into a fight or scream and yell doesn't mean that he's not a fit captain. And, you know, I'm willing to give him the C. You know, if you want to rotate some A's around, you know, that's fine with me. You know, Boyle or Blake, my whole vision on the Blake or JR thing is that if you got a guy on a 1 year deal, you don't give him an A or a C because you want to have some sort of continuity there. So I don't know. You think JR should have an A?
Yes. Absolutely.
Even though he's only on a 1 year deal.
Do we know that for sure? He's not going to come back? I mean, what if he has another year like last year? He could be back.
We don't know he's not coming back, but there's certain, I mean, we can certainly say he's on the tail end of a
sure.
downhill slide.
Absolutely. But whatever is going to get this team to the Stanley Cup finals, whoever's going to be the one leading the charge, I don't care who it is. I mean, just so long as they get there. And I think the most important thing is it has to be McClellan's call. And if he's going with Marlowe, Marlowe's his guy, then that's great.
Okay. Let's talk about another story that surfaced this week. A past assistant captain that we talked about last week, Jeff Friesen. He's working out with Captain Zeiss, and there was a post on Pollock's blog again about Friesen and how part of the reason, or at least his reason for not being all he could be, let's say, is the nicest possible way of putting it, in the past few years, is because he's been nursing a back injury, and at least this past summer or this past year, some root cause has been found out about that, and he's back in camp healthier than ever and ready to play. What do you think about that? Is Friesen, does that mean Friesen really could make this team?
No.
Tell me how you really feel.
Listen, if he's going to have a resurgence, and be, if he's healthy, I think it's great that the Sharks are giving him a chance. And like we've talked about, there's still a lot of unknowns as far as our roster goes. And, you know, I floated the idea that it's very possible that a forward could be on his way out because we've got a lot of depth at forward. Is Friesen being in camp maybe a signal that this my premonition could be true, Mike?
Every news that comes out is going to support your little personal hobby horse of trading a forward here.
But logically, that's where our depth is. So if, you know, Doug Wilson's trying to get his first round pick and some cap room back and maybe a prospect, trading a forward and then having a healthy Jeff Friesen to take his spot. I mean, are we ignoring the obvious here, Mike?
No. I'll be as blunt as you. We're not ignoring the obvious. I mean, you know, we have a pretty stable set of forwards here. We have a lack of scoring last year. You know, we had some guys that weren't playing all that great and scoring as many goals as we've seen them score. And to trade some of those guys away, to me, would be reducing the efficacy of the weakest part of this team right now. So I don't see why we would want to trade Mahalik or Cheech. Even to get cap room, even if we have to get cap room. So I'd rather get rid of players that we have to get rid of. And unfortunately, Kyle McLaren might fall into that category.
So is Friesen just here for show, like we talked about last week? And why is he here? Where is he going to play?
Maybe
he can't play on the third or fourth line. I mean, we saw what a disaster that was for Calgary. Even though maybe he was hurt, he's not that type of player.
To be honest, search me. You know, this is why I'm not, you know, maybe they see something in him that I don't see, or I haven't, you know, obviously I haven't seen him skate a captain's ice. And if I get the opportunity to see training camp, I mean, that would certainly be one player I'd be zeroing in on to see what is this guy really going to offer anybody.
We'll see. Hey, Mike, this just in. John McCain asked Matt Sundin to be his running mate, and Matt Sundin said he had to think about it. It's breaking news.
That's a good one. I can't beat that. Especially if there's, you know, the whole hockey mom tie-in thing. So that's a good one. I can't top that. So I'm gonna have to move on to other news in the NHL. So there were two big trades. We just talked about the possibility of maybe trading a forward, where there were two big defenseman trades in the NHL this week. And the first one was Andre Mazaras from the Senators being traded to Tampa Bay, who seems to be stockpiling nearly every hockey player on earth. And they got in return Philippe Kuba, Alexander Picard, a good young forward, and a number one draft pick. So, you know, your initial reaction to this trade was?
My initial reaction to this trade was I thought it was initially a good deal for Ottawa, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They got Kuba, who's a serviceable, you know, third, fourth defenseman.
He's 30 points a year. Yeah, he's a power play kind of defenseman.
He's a decent player. You know, he's a good guy.
I'd say he's 30 points a year.
He's the equivalent of, you know, maybe not quite the same skill set, but he's sort of like an Ehrhoff type of player, maybe a little less physical. And then they get Picard, who's kind of the mystery in the deal. You know, he's a prospect. He's seen some time. He played in Philly. I mean, I think he's got like 80 NHL games, and you know, he's been decent. I think like 80 games, he's got like 30 points. He seems to be a big kid, and at 23, he's got a shot at being a real effective player. And then they get the Sharks' first round pick too. So,
right,
you know, even though that might be a late 20s pick, shipping out a guy who clearly didn't want to be there anymore. Although the irony is that Mazzara signed what for $4 million?
Which is what the Senators were offering.
I mean, that. So obviously he didn't want to stay, or Brian Murray was just being a total cheapskate and offering him like 3.1.
Yeah, maybe the Senators are just, you know, finally just dumping it. You know, they're finally getting rid of this stuff because they don't feel like paying him. I mean, the fact is, Mazaros has been in the league 3 years. He scored over 35 points every year in the league, which is pretty rare. So he's got real offensive upside. He's a big guy, and he's young. And why you would want to get rid of a guy like that, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it really both teams, you could see how it might be in. It's hard to say. Picard's really the wild card in the deal. I mean, because
apparently Brian Murray really wanted him specifically too. It wasn't just like, oh, and we need a prospect along with Kuba in a first round. And it's like, no, he wanted Picard. So maybe Brian Murray sees something in this guy. I don't know.
I see Ottawa being run slowly into the ground.
Right.
So they're going to.
Ottawa getting worse.
Yep. Yeah, well, we'll talk more about them in our season preview.
Okay. To be continued coming up in a couple weeks. The other big news is another Canadian defenseman this time, one that was not much of a surprise, unlike the Mazzara deal, but Brian McCabe was finally traded from Toronto. The Toronto finally managed to run his ass out of town to the wonderful wasteland of Florida for McCabe and a fourth-round pick for Mike Van Rijn.
Who?
Exactly. So, just to give you all a quick clue in on who Mike Van Ryn is, he's a 29-year-old defenseman. His maximum number of points was 37. He had 37 points twice. So McCabe's 33, I think. Van Ryn's 29. So it's not like they're really getting a lot younger with Van Ryn. It's just a dump move. It's a salary dump move. Nothing more. I mean, McCabe had, 23 points last year in limited play, 50 some odd games. He had 57 points the year before that. He had 68 points the year before that. So, I mean, this is a guy who, at least a couple years ago, was certainly among the elite defensemen in terms of point production. You know, Toronto is, they love to beat him up over his defensive mishaps. And, I don't see enough Toronto games to really know if that's true or not. Or maybe they're just, picking on the guy. I have no clue. But the fact is, to me, he seems like he's got some stuff left in the tank. But
I can't believe I'm going to say this, Mike, but I think Florida actually made a good deal.
If they have a lot of cap room, I think it's a good deal. I mean, clearly that's why Toronto wanted to dump this guy. Here's a guy that, has some all-star numbers in the past, and he gets dumped for a sort of a nondescript, in NHL terms, middle-aged defenseman with not a lot of upside, and they get a pick. It's like,
I see the headlines in Toronto, Alzheimer's dumps all-star.
But the fact is, Toronto was over barrel with this guy's contract. They made a lot of dumb moves, and they've quickly replaced them with more dumb moves than signing Jeff Finger and Nicholas Hagman. So.
They get a serviceable defenseman in return. They get rid of a lot of money. I guess it makes sense for both teams. But if I was Ron Wilson, is the gun in your mouth already?
I mean, maybe he's hoping that he's just, maybe he just.
Who's going to score for that team, Mike?
Toronto?
Who is going to score? I was looking at their forwards. Who's going to score?
Alex Steen.
It's bad. It is pretty bad.
That's crazy. So let's talk about what I mentioned earlier in the show. So these two guys getting traded, Mazarov getting what we would both consider to be a fairly limited amount of money in $4 million. I mean, this is a young guy with a lot of upside and scores. He only got $4 million, so what does this say about the ability or lack thereof of the Sharks to trade Kyle McLaren?
Another guy
in the Pacific Division, Matthew Schneider, who the Ducks probably have to dump before the season starts. So there's two guys in the Pacific Division.
That's going
to
be a real big challenge for them because, Schneider's making, $5.5 million?
Something like that, yeah.
There's a limited amount of teams who can take on that type of salary. And off the top of my head, you got to say the Kings. Atlanta, Phoenix, the Islanders, the Predators, which the Predators are out. Vancouver, they're out. Columbus, maybe. They don't really have a puck mover back there anymore. The Islanders, they kind of probably want you to play on the blue line, Mike. Phoenix, no. Atlanta, I guess. That might be a place that would be a fit, but with Van Ryn being moved and McCabe being moved and the other defensemen switching places, I think these were moves that everybody's waiting on. Mm-hmm. McCabe and Mazaros being traded, and now, the blocks are going to fall into place as far as what's going to happen with McLaren. Is he really the one who's going to go here, or is it a forward, Mike?
I know you think, but I think both of those guys are going to get moved, Schneider and McLaren. And I think now we can sort of see, based on these moves, what kind of stuff we're going to fetch. So this sort of pipe dream of us trading a Kyle McLaren for a decent draft pick or a prospect is I think pretty much out the window at this point. I think we're going to have to give up Kyle McLaren and a pick for something, or Kyle McLaren for a low pick. And the same might be true with Schneider. Schneider might fall into the McCabe category where you'd have to package Schneider and a pick to get people interested, and they would give you sort of a middle kind of guy in return that they don't really like. That could be very well what we're going to see. We're going to see a replication of both of these moves, in that the guys trading the so-called talent in the Sharks and the Ducks are going to get very little in return.
Yeah, that seems to be the facts of the matter right now.
Yeah, it's a rough business out there right now for trading decently priced or middle of the road defensemen right now. It's crazy.
Nobody's willing to take out your trash.
One man can't get traded.
Why would you help the Ducks anyways? I mean, why would you want to help them? Hey, are you interested in Schneider? I'll take a 7th round pick. Wait, how much over the cap are you? $3 million. Click. We're going to let you eat it. You know, why would you help him?
Because maybe you could use a guy like Schneider, although I don't see how he can't fall into anybody's long-term plans. He's only got 1 year left on his deal. I mean, he's got...
I'm really hoping that nobody takes him. And then we're going to find out what happens when they're $3 million. They'd have to waive him.
Yeah, they would, wouldn't they?
Yep, and that could happen.
And since... Actually... If he signed his deal after he's 35 years old, they have to eat it anyway. So waving him wouldn't even solve anything for them, which would be really funny. The funny thing is about that is Kings make the most sense, but because Schneider used to play there back in the day, but they have that whole problem with usually
1962.
Teams don't trade within the division very often. Although the Kings did a couple years or last year with Nordstrom, but okay, well those are the news. Those are the news stories of the week, guys. Enjoy the still ongoing off season, which I can't wait to be over, but keep on listening to Dudes on Hockey and keep on reading our blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. And that does it for episode 11. I'm Mike, that's Doug. We'll talk to you again next week, guys.
This just in, Mike. Matt Centine's 17-year-old daughter pregnant.
8 the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.